Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We had a meeting of the minds and agreement with the speaker in January. We all know what that is represented. Matt articulated a lot of those things today on the floor of the House.
Frustration brewing among the Republican Party. Chip Roy, representative from Texas.
The fact of the matter is, let's be very clear, we talked about reducing spending. That was a part of the agreement. We all know that, and we talked about it publicly, and we haven't done that. Period. Full stop. We haven't done what we agreed to do. We talked about passing a balanced budget. We talked about actually passing a budget. We haven't done that, right? We talked about having term limits, bringing a bill to the floor. We haven't done that. So that's what Matt was getting at. And the point here is, you know, we can go back and talk about the agreement, but the point here is the American people and the people suffering at home expect us to do our job. That's the point that we're dealing with here in September.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is indeed an important and I think a significant day for American agriculture whenever it happens.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Tuesday.
But it's particularly important because this is, as was indicated, the 50th celebration of the WASI report. I want to acknowledge the deputy. She and I have gotten to know each other the last couple of months, and I know that she is interested in hearing this report. This may be a first for her. I want to acknowledge Seth, our chief economist. Seth and his team do a terrific job taking these numbers, and then each month whenever these numbers come out and there are various reports that are filed, I always get an email from Seth that explains it to me in a way that I understand, which can't be easy for him. These are incredibly important numbers, and it's important for Secretary and Deputy Secretary to understand and appreciate what they mean in the real world. And Seth and his team do a terrific job. And the folks at NASS, this is one of 450 reports that they do every single year. I mean, just think about that. There are only 365 days in a year. So on some days, they're issuing multiple reports, which means that there are a whole lot of people working really, really hard every single day to give us the information that is necessary for us to have functioning markets, which is incredibly important.
50 years or 600 monthly WASDE reports. But what's the significance of the NASS work?
You know, today we've got the crop production report, which is important to corn and soybean producers, cotton producers. We also have WASDE's supply of crops in the U.S. and the world. Who's that important to? Well, it's important to wheat growers and coarse grain growers and oil seeds, cottons, and sugar. And when we look at the U.S. supply, we're going to get a sense of meat and poultry, eggs and milk. And we even get a little taste of what's going on in Mexico, as the report includes some information about the supply and use of sugar in Mexico. This is the 50th anniversary of WASDE, but it's the 161st year of the crop production report. I have on my desk the first report from the Commissioner of Agriculture in 1863. He was reporting to President Lincoln about the activities of the Department of Agriculture. It was 632 pages of information, and most of it was data. Because they recognized and appreciated the importance of data. This work behind the scenes that gets attention in this moment, but then gets analyzed and utilized for weeks on end, helps to establish the market prices that mean the difference between making it and not making it for many producers. This is a report that directs a better understanding for policymakers about the challenges that agriculture faces and the important role that trade plays in the farming economy, the opportunities and the competition that we may potentially face. I will say one thing about these folks. They have worked really hard to maintain the integrity of this report. I mean, this is really, really important. If you get a second or two advantage in knowing what these reports are, it can make the difference in terms of the market. So I know the team here has worked incredibly hard to make sure that every single report is unbiased and authoritative and that the information is made available to everybody at the same time. You know, that sounds like a relatively simple thing, but in this day and age of technology, they've really had to work hard to figure out how to do that in a fair way.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Mr. Speaker, dust off our written January agreement. You have a copy. Reflect on the spirit of that agreement and build on the start that we had moments ago. Begin to comply.
Fireworks on Capitol Hill Tuesday as Florida Representative Matt Gaetz threatening to bring the House to a standstill.
No continuing resolutions, individual spending bills or bust, votes on balanced budgets and term limits, subpoenas for Hunter Biden and the members of the Biden family who've been grifting off of this country, and the impeachment for Joe Biden that he so richly deserves. Do these things or face a motion to vacate the chair. And let me alert the country. A motion to vacate might not pass at first, but it might before the 15th vote. And if Democrats bail out McCarthy, as they may do, then I will lead the resistance to this uniparty and the Biden-McCarthy-Jeffries government that they are attempting to build. I know that Washington isn't a town where people are known for keeping their word. Well, Speaker McCarthy, I'm here to hold you to yours.
While Gaetz was on the floor expressing his frustration, out on the steps, Representative Andrew Clyde from Georgia.
The country gave House Republicans the majority to change the course of Congress. Greenlighting a so-called clean or unqualified or blind CR is completely out of the question. It would endanger the Republican majority and endanger Speaker McCarthy's leadership. We will not kick the can of addressing excessive government spending down the road again in order to buy the uniparty more time to produce yet another horrendous backroom deal. Such a decision would not only lead us to fail in delivering on our promises, but would ultimately fail the American people who sent us here to fix this broken system. As a new and conservative appropriator, my top priority remains passing each of the 12 appropriation bills in a conservative and fiscally responsible manner, meaning true FY22 top-level spending, just as we vowed to do. If our Republican colleagues share this goal, then it's past time that we put in the work to achieve it.
And Clay Higgins from Louisiana.
We have an opportunity to save our country or lose it. And a lot of that fight is going to happen in the next 2 weeks. A continuing resolution we oppose. We already voted no on the omnibus. They're asking us to support a CR that represents Democrat policies and insane levels of spendings that we've already voted no on. So we are prepared to work with our colleagues within the Republican conference to come together ultimately and pass these 12 appropriation bills. We're working right now, our offices and our staffs, to make that happen. We call upon the American people to stand with us. If we don't change the trajectory of spending, you young Americans are not going to have a country. If $2 trillion of deficit spending this year, so the Treasury prints Treasury bonds, 20-year Treasury bonds, we sell those bonds to other nation states. That's how you finance your deficit spending. What are you going to do in 2043? What are you young Americans going to do in 20 years when your federal government, with the full faith and credit of your United States Treasury, are constitutionally bound to service $2 trillion of debt in that year? Be one-fifth of your federal revenue. You'll have no discretionary spending. The total amount of discretionary spending that we're arguing over right now is less than the deficit that we've accumulated this year. You young Americans better pay attention to who's actually fighting for you.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This week, we're going to talk about anaplasmosis.
Dr. Mark Johnson is Oklahoma State University beef breeding specialist.
It's not a pleasant topic. It is something that we deal with in the state of Oklahoma when we think about cow-calf production, beef production in general. And effectively, we're going to talk about how we manage around it and try to prevent it. Now, anaplasmosis can be spread from beef animal to beef animal a number of ways. First, there is some evidence that a lot of anaplasm gets transferred whenever we're just working cattle. It can be needles as we give vaccinations. It can be dehorning, castration instruments. Anything that transmits blood from one animal, from blood to the next animal, is potentially a source of transferring anaplasmosis. But we know anaplasm is also carried by ticks and certain flies. One of the realities of it is we have anaplasm in beef animals in the state of Oklahoma. and it can be effectively managed so it doesn't become a big issue for us. Typically, if we see anaplasma outbreaks, while there are clinical signs of this disease, the way we often figure out we've got an outbreak is we start finding dead cattle, particularly the cattle that are 2 years of age or older, is where we see this disease manifest itself. And so what measures can we take to prevent this problem? First, if we will feed a tetracycline product in our mineral or as part of our supplemental feed program, we can prevent this from causing us issues. Now, the first and foremost thing that we need to do in 2022 is consult with our veterinarian, because it's going to require a veterinary feed directive, or VFD, in order to get that prescription to have that mineral or purchase that mineral with the tetracycline products in it. They're going to prevent an anaplasma outbreak. So consult your vet, get a VFD in place. It's definitely the time of year right now that we want cattle on a tetracycline product to prevent outbreaks. If we see clinical signs and we've got animals that are dealing with this, it can be treated with antibiotic products. Again, you're going to need to consult your veterinarian to talk about how to address it from that standpoint. When we think about other measures we can do to try to minimize the impact of anaplasma, actually, and it is kind of an extra level of management, if we're given herd vaccinations, by actually changing needles from animal to animal, we're going to prevent that transference. If we can control ticks and flies to the extent possible, whether it is burning pastures in the spring where we've got a history of tick issues in those pastures, or potentially rotating so we're not using those pastures that have got higher tick infestations this time of year, we know that's going to be beneficial to us. Controlling flies and all the means that we've discussed in past cow-calf corners to try to keep fly populations under control, all the way through insecticide products that we can use on cattle to prevent or control flies and ticks.
Well, we move from production issues to issues in Washington, D.C. Mary Thomas Hart with NCBA.
It's always busy here in D.C. It's still a farm bill year. We're still working on the farm bill. Always keeping, you know, climate policy in mind, watching both USDA and EPA to see how they manage those issues. And I think there's always a lot going on in the water space. You know, we got an unfavorable decision from the Supreme Court back in 2020 related to groundwater regulation under the Clean Water Act. And EPA is expected to introduce some rulemakings in that arena. So no shortage of issues, no shortage of work, but hopefully we are getting closer by the day to having some finality when it comes to WOTUS.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We're now estimating 94.9 million acres of corn planted. That's up 0.8%, or 772,000 acres from what we estimated back at the end of June, again tied to that FSA certified acreage information.
Lance Honig is the chief of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. On the new crop production report,
FSA will be releasing a new file of that this afternoon as well, so you can get a look at that. Overall, we're now up 7.1% from what was planted last year. Area harvested for grain, 87.1 million acres. Similar adjustment there to what was made on the planted side, up 774,000 acres from what we had previously estimated, 10% more than last season. Looking at yield, we're now forecasting 173.8 bushels per acre. That's down 0.7%, or 1.3 bushels per acre from what we published last month. But overall, it is still up just slightly, about half a bushel from last year's final yield. So overall, our production forecast at 15.1 billion bushels is up just 2%, or just 23.1 million bushels from last month's forecast, 10% more than was produced last season. Just a quick look here at what the acreage looks like for corn. The top number is the planted area. The gold line is the harvested area. And again, you can see the big increase in corn acreage this season. Taking a look at the corn yield over the last 30 seasons, you see the gray trend line plotted in there as well. This is kind of the story of these crops the last few years, right? We're below trend, but we're the fifth highest yield on record. So not bad for a below trend yield.
Those are the numbers for corn, but what about estimates for soybeans?
83.6 million acres now estimated to be planted. That's up only a tenth of a percent, or 95,000 acres from what we published back in June. So very small adjustment made there. It is still off 4.4% year over year. Similar adjustment made on the harvested side yield. We're now forecasting 50.1 bushels per acre. That's down 1.6%, or 8/10 of a bushel from what we forecast last month. It is still up 1.2%, or 6/10 of a bushel from last year, but now we're looking at production at 4.15 billion bushels. That's off 1.4% month over month, and 3% from last season. Just a quick look at the acreage picture here. Of course, the big increase in corn acres, fairly significant decrease in soybean acres this year. Is still the fifth highest planted and harvested acres on record for soybeans, though, despite the decrease here. The top four on this chart as well.
He admits that the U.S. cotton crop is tanking due to extreme conditions in Texas, but what's production look like?
We do see a 10% increase in yield in Texas month over month. Obviously, the color of that state's going to look a little bit different on the next map I show you. You can see declines across all of the southeast month over month, but fairly modest declines there. But again, looking year over year, declines pretty much across almost all of the growing area, and that big decrease in Texas, that's what's driving your big drop in yield at the national level. Of course, Texas is by far our largest producing state for cotton. Here, just a quick picture of the cotton production over time. Much like the yield, is the lowest production since 2015.
Lance Honig is chief of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, or NAS. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Here's the thing. Our founding fathers, in creating this country, created separation of power. It is incumbent upon those of us with election certificates, particularly in the House of Representatives, but also the Senate, to stand up at this end of Pennsylvania Avenue and hold the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue and the executive branch accountable.
Texas Representative Chip Roy is a member of the Freedom Caucus.
A president and an executive branch that is out of control. My question for my colleagues, particularly my Republican colleagues, is when is it enough? When is it enough to stand up and do what you campaigned to do and use the power of the purse to stop this administration from trampling the American people? Spending is out of control. Federal government will spend $2 trillion more than it takes in this year to fund the very agencies and programs at war with the American people. Inflation is opposed to 17% across-the-board tax on Americans. We've added $1.5 trillion in debt since the so-called debt deal. We are now spending more on interest on the debt than we are in defending the United States of America. The Department of Defense is threatening our national defense by turning our military into a social engineering experiment wrapped in a uniform. COVID tyranny is rearing its ugly head again. It was announced today. CIA whistleblowers told the COVID Select Committee that the CIA bribed its own analysts to deny the Wuhan lab leak theory. Yesterday, the FDA approved new COVID-19 boosters for children as young as 6 months old, and we haven't even had clinical trials. We're funding a healthcare system broken by Washington and big insurance while average Americans foot the bill. Energy. We're destroying our ability to have reliable energy. The Inflation Reduction Act's $1.2 trillion handout to unreliable wind and solar, big corporations and rich leftists, and the Chinese Communist Party remain in effect right now. DOJ is advancing a politicized form of justice, targeting former President Trump, targeting dads like Scott Smith in Loudoun County, which thankfully Governor Youngkin just pardoned. Mark Houck, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, for defending his son. And perhaps most of all, as a Texan, and for all of us, particularly a few New Yorkers these days, perhaps people are paying attention to a border that is so devastatingly broken that Americans are dying. How many moms do I have to sit next to in another round table in Texas who lost their son or their daughter to fentanyl? How many migrants have to die in the back of a tractor trailer in San Antonio? How many have to die in the Rio Grande? How many girls have to get sold into the sex trafficking trade before this body will wake up and stop an out-of-control president? Enough. Why would we fund that? That's my question for the Republican leadership. Why will you fund that? Let me be very clear. I will not continue to fund a government at war with the American people. We are here to change it. It is time to end it. And I'm proud to stand with these patriots to do that.
At this point, the caucus prepared to allow the government to shut down.
Right now, we're here presenting what we believe is the right path forward to make sure this country is actually saved from deficits, from wide open borders, from a woke military and a DOJ that's weaponized against the American people. We're here to stand up for them. And if Democrats don't want to work with us on that, if some of our Republican colleagues don't want to work with us on that, that's on them to figure out what's going to happen on October 1. But under no circumstances should we have a dirty CR, a clean CR, so-called, on October 1. That should not be on the table.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
America is China's number one target. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
Former trade ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, at an event sponsored by the American Enterprise Institute.
This is a central question of presidential leadership, both for the current president and for the next one. Communist China is the greatest threat to American security and prosperity by far. It has stated its goal of diminishing American influence in the world and replacing it with its own. To meet this threat, there must be a series of fundamental shifts in our policies. Before I describe those changes, let's first look at what we need to shift away from. China became a member of the World Trade Organization in 2001. This proved to be a fateful decision. America brought China into the WTO. Democrats and Republicans supported it. At the time, and for more than a decade after, there was a bipartisan consensus that this was all reward and no risk. Our leaders told us it would bring China into the modern economy and open its huge market to the world. They said it would make China more free, open, and democratic, that China would become more like us. I understand why this dream was appealing. We saw it happen with Japan after World War II, and then again with one Asian country after another. From South Korea to Singapore, they moved into the company of free and open nations, but not China. This American assumption proved disastrously false. Our thinking neglected the role of communist ideology. The Chinese Communist Party didn't want to be like us. It still doesn't. China grew stronger by taking advantage of our open markets, but it also grew less free. President Donald Trump deserves credit for upending this bipartisan consensus. He made both parties take off their blinders. Despite the divisions in our politics today, both parties are now more clear-eyed about the Chinese threat that they have been that has been there for a very long time. That's a good thing. But being clear-eyed is just not enough. It's not the same as having the right solutions and the necessary determination to protect America. President Trump was almost singularly focused on our trade relationship with China. He was right about our trade abuses. It was and still is a critical issue. But Trump did too little about the rest of the Chinese threat. He did not put us on a stronger military foothold in Asia. He did not stop the flow of American technology and investment into the Chinese military. He did not effectively rally our allies against the Chinese threat. Even the trade deal he signed came up short when China predictably failed to live up to its commitments. He also showed moral weakness. In his zeal to befriend President Xi, Trump congratulated the Communist Party on its 70th anniversary of conquering China. That sent a wrong message to the world. Chinese communism must be condemned, never congratulated.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The current farm bill expires in just a matter of days now, but Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says because lawmakers have so many varied ideas and priorities they would like to see in that bill, and the budget for the bill is so very limited, it is going to be difficult to settle on what that bill should contain. Vilsack told visiting National Farmers Union members Monday in his opinion.
It's very difficult for one group up there on the Hill to essentially sacrifice their priority for the other group's priority. And they're stuck. Now, they'll tell you they're working on it, and they are. And I will tell you the chairs of the committees are working hard. All four of those individuals care deeply about this, and they want it to get done. They got a challenge.
A challenge, Vilsack says, is going to be hard to overcome unless folks look outside the farm bill, perhaps, to the Inflation Reduction Act, for example, for resources and programs to help farmers. Gary Crawford, Washington.